Hello and welcome, everyone. I am pleased to be joined by Gary Romano of Civitas Strategies. My name is Greg Nielsen, President and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting. And Gary and I, as we've done before, if you recall during the Paycheck Protection Program and the CARES Act, wanted to come back together and talk about some of the most recent developments that we've seen and some of what we're hearing when it comes to the most recent stimulus talks. So those of you who have been following the news know that over the weekend, Congress struck a tentative deal on the stimulus that was going to have impacts on the Paycheck Protection Program, direct payments for individuals, charitable giving. Some of that has been thrown into flux over the past 24 hours or so. But Gary and I wanted to come together and talk a little bit about what type of impact nonprofit organizations might see from this. So, Gary, welcome back.
I'm glad to be here.
It's
Wonderful to
good
be
to
here.
have you good to have you with us. You know what? Let's dive right in and start where a lot of nonprofits I know are paying attention to, and that's the Paycheck Protection Program. Talk to us a little
Absolutely.
bit about what you are hearing and what you think is coming down the pipe relative to the Paycheck Protection Program.
So I think there are some things that we know, and there's a number of things we don't know, right? We've been here before.
We have.
And I think that the devil, of course, is going to be in the details, which hopefully we'll be getting over the next couple of weeks. What we're seeing is this PPP 2.0, as they're calling it, right? This second PPP is an opportunity for those who didn't get a PPP, as well as those who did, as long as you meet certain criteria. So this is like the bigger idea, right? So what we're seeing is that criteria is quarter over quarter, 25% or more or greater difference in your gross receipts. So what does that mean? What that means is in quarter two of 2019, how does the gross receipts, just your income as an operation, as an organization, compare to quarter two of 2020? So that's the comparison, right? And if the 2020 revenue is 25% or more below what it was previously. So if you had to close down, if you just had a reduced level of operation because of government orders, fewer customers coming in, right? And you can hit that mark, then you're eligible for another PPP. And everything we're seeing is that it would be roughly quantified, unless you're in the restaurant industry, which is a whole nother story, at 2.5, the average monthly payroll. So again, the same way we did it, right? So that's one big difference, right? Oh no, go ahead. Sorry.
No, so I think the first takeaway for nonprofits listening, and this has been a question that has come up, is yes, under the current terms of the legislation, as we understand it, nonprofits that did receive a PPP the first time around could, that keyword could again, could be eligible for another round of the PPP. That's a fair takeaway so far.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. And that is a huge question, right, that people have had. What the other change that's really a big one from the past is we have still the 60-40 split, right? So 60% of it has to go to salaries, right? Those payroll costs. But the other 40%, there was some frustration because it was very narrow in what you could use it for. And that's expanded. And by the way, that expands for forgiveness as well. But this includes costs related to tracking and processing your payroll, right?
Right.
Some of your facilities and business operations that are related to those facilities. In some cases, your inventory, right? Billing and record keeping functions, accounting, right? These are all things that you can now add to that. Now, for most people, because of the expansion to the 24 weeks, as we've talked about previously, it's not a big deal. But later on in the conversation, we're going to talk about employee retention tax credits, and this is money that wouldn't be double counted for those purposes. We'll talk more about that later.
So if I'm a nonprofit listening to this, my first takeaway is if I received a PPP the first time around, I could be eligible again for a second bite at the apple. And my other takeaway listening to you is now would be a good time to start running some of those numbers, to start gathering what were my gross receipts in each quarter of 2020, and how do those compare to each quarter of 2019? So that if we are subject to a revenue test, if that's what the legislation turns out to be, we're at least prepared to move forward with can we apply this time around?
That's right. And I would add to that that if you are seeing that difference and you do say, gosh, it looks like we're eligible, then I would start pulling together your tax returns, right? So again, let's remember back to the first application, typically 2018, 2019 tax returns. You're going to need to have copies of them. You're going to need your 941s, those quarterly filings that you have with the federal government for all four quarters, 2019 and now 2020. Right, as well as likely some payroll documentation. We can go into the minutia as we know it, but there's also some signs that you'll be able to change the reference points that not some signs, they did say you can change the reference point for the salaries that you'd be using as your average.
Now,
And
here,
so,
let's
yeah.
dive into something that we don't know yet. We've seen a lot of discussion of what they've called micro businesses, defined as organizations, small businesses with 10 or fewer employees. The rumor was, or the early conversation was, that they may be exempt from that revenue test. What's the latest you're hearing on that?
So, I'm still not hearing anything definitively, right? The one of the best sources out there that I know of did an update yesterday, and basically they said it in a way that showed they're unsure of the intention as well. So what it comes down to is when you look at the clause, right, and you sit there through the 5,000 pages of the Act, which I'm sure you all have had a chance to read. And you go to that clause, it is unclear as to whether this is a set aside for businesses in marginalized communities and who are also under 10 employees, or if it's marginalized communities. And also, we have a set aside for businesses under 10 employees. And there's no clear guidance as to whether they then get out of this revenue test. So I think there's a few different questions there that we still have that unfortunately are going to have to await SBA guidance.
Before we talk about changes to the forgiveness process itself, when do you think, assuming the legislation gets signed, we'll call it this week, the week of Christmas, when do you think organizations and small businesses might see the application process opening for the PPP?
I mean, I'd love to say, so if you currently the administration, the SBA's official line is it could be within a week. I think that's pretty improbable. Now, I think it's going to be faster than it was in the past because even though there are some changes to the program, the overall mechanics of it are very similar or the same. So there shouldn't be major software overhauls, but as we know, all the banks are using software for your applications,
Yes.
right? So those are going to have to be recoded. So I'd be very surprised if it opened in the first half of January. And I think as you start to get to the later half of January, more and more probable, and I would be very surprised if it wasn't open by the end of January, considering the urgency.
A lot of what we've talked about so far has been about another round of the PPP, but the stimulus legislation, as we understand it now, also makes some changes to the forgiveness process for the previous round of PPP. How would you summarize some of those changes?
I mean, I think the biggest change is the 150,000. So what the federal government has said is that if you have a loan of 150,000 or less, you're going to be able to use a simplified form. So now we had the 3508S, which many of us really liked, right? Which was basically an attestation that said, I didn't go out and buy a yacht with it, the money, right? I did the right thing. And then you had to attach some additional, things showing how you spent money. What we're looking at is probably that form without the attachments, but it does clearly say no attachments, just an attestation saying, trust me, I used the money properly. And I know a lot of folks out there are going to sit there and say, but wait a minute, does that really apply to me? Lack some self-confidence. This is a lot of money. We have to remember the big numbers. When you look at the PPP, there were a handful of loans that were very, very, very large, but they were very, very, very large, right? Up to $10 million. So when you start looking at these 150 below, these are much smaller fry in the eyes of the federal government, which is not to diminish the great achievement you have in keeping your organization together. But this is for you. This does apply to you. And so, hopefully we will start seeing those forms roll out by the end of the month. And I think the banks are eager to get these loans off their rolls. So even more so. The other thing on PPP forgiveness, which is I think a really important point, is the EIDL advance. I don't know if you want to talk about that one or I can.
No, I'm going to defer to you on all things idle. I know you and I have talked about the idle in the past. We both have strong feelings on that. But I'll defer to you to talk a little bit about that idle advanced change.
So if we go back to the heady days of last spring, you know,
are we
many
sure
people,
that was only last spring? That
I know,
that
right?
Does seem like it was about a decade ago.
When I was 6 years younger,
yes.
Back then, it did have all this white, my beard didn't have the beard. You know, what we were looking at was an idle advance, right? So for many of you, this was the program that you entered into. It had a loan component that's not forgivable, but it also had a cash advance. And most people were doing the cash advance. They got $1,000 to $10,000 and they were thrilled to get it. It was a quick cash infusion. The hitch was the federal government said repeatedly, if you're going to have a PPP, when you go for forgiveness, that cash advance is part of your forgiveness, right? So if you got a $100,000 PPP and you had a $10,000 idle advance, that would mean you'd only get $90,000 in forgiveness on your PPP. So two things happen, right? One is you kind of, you know, end up not having all the money you were assuming you were going to have, right? Because let's face it, a lot of us were moving quickly and not necessarily thinking about the ramifications. The second thing is you and the bank end up with a little tiny $10,000 loan, right? And so in recognition of some of the problems, the potential problems the banks and individuals and nonprofits and for-profits were going to have with this issue, the new forgiveness process retroactively, so if you put your application in, you should be asking for it back, applies that the idle does not count against your forgiveness, the idle advance. So, you know.
So good news for small businesses on that front.
That's right. It means a little extra money.
So let's jump. We spent most of our time talking PPP so far. There are other important changes for nonprofits and small businesses in the proposed legislation. The one of the ones that's been most discussed is the direct payments to individuals, which impacts our employees, ourselves, and those that we serve if we're in a nonprofit organization. What are you hearing on the latest on direct payments to individuals?
I mean, well, you know, the latest is they may go up. Right. You know, we're certainly hearing, you know, right now, we do know that we're at, you know, $600 per person, right? There's a cap
of 75,000.
Yes, that's right. So family of four, you're looking at $2,400, right? You know, and again, individuals, 75,000, raise cap for a couple, 150,000. But you know, there's also this opportunity here. The president did express dissatisfaction with that level, and the Democrats appear willing to play on it and very quickly. And so the question is, here's where we get into some timing challenges. We have about 5 business days before our government runs out of money. So something is going to have to be signed and acted on quickly. So, you know, I would say, you know, it's a good question as to whether there's going to be some sort of compromise raising that number, or theoretically, you know, there were enough votes in the original vote where you can imagine an override of a veto.
So I think that that's something for people to pay attention to. And if they haven't been watching the news closely or as closely as you and I have, you know, where we stood was coming out of the weekend, Congress had a deal, which was going to be, as you said, $600 per person. So family of four expecting $2,400. Treasury Secretary had said they were expecting to get those checks out the door pretty early next week. But then last night, within the last 24 hours, as you said, the president expressed dissatisfaction with the amount. And so now I think we're back in that uncertain land of, will Congress reopen those discussions? Will that amount rise from 600? The president threw out a number of $2,000 per person, which is significantly more. We'll see what Congress is going to do with that. I think the next 24 to 48 hours are going to be key. I think there's some action taking place on Capitol Hill right now to try to wrestle with what do we do, if anything, with that. So I think for those listening to the video, watching the video, keep an eye on the news over the next 24 to 48 hours, because I think that's going to tell us the story there on the direct payments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that'll also affect, going back to your earlier question, Greg, right? You know, what the timing of all this will be.
Right.
Right. Because we end up in, you know, some little political do loop for the next 2 weeks that's going to push everything back because there's still going to be needed. The SBA and Treasury are going to need time to start creating these programs and rolling them out. So do know that may influence that timeline.
So for our other individuals and nonprofits that may be watching or listening, also other provisions to pay attention to in the stimulus package. I know one of them is charitable giving that a lot of nonprofits, particularly in the holidays, should be paying attention to.
And I know that's one you're following far more closely than I am, Greg. What are you seeing?
Well, I think one of the things that nonprofits saw in 2020, which was a positive, is in the prior CARES Act legislation, it created a universal $300 charitable giving deduction, meaning whether you as an individual or a family itemized on your taxes or not, you had the ability to give up to $300 to a charity and deduct that. Take that as an above the line deduction. What we've seen in the stimulus legislation is that they've extended that to 2020, 2021, which was not supposed to happen, but did. And they've expanded it to now be $600 per married couple filing jointly. So it's not just a $300 above the line deduction. It's up to $600 potentially for individuals who don't itemize. For those who do itemize, they extended those charitable giving incentives and raising those caps on deductible amounts for charitable giving for those. But for the majority of people who don't itemize, that $600 charitable giving incentive is important both for families and also for nonprofit organizations. One of the things that we saw in the data from 2020 is that charitable giving was bolstered by that ability to make that above the line deduction and also by those direct payments. So when we saw the first round of direct payments to individuals, the data showed that a significant number of American families wrote those over to nonprofit organizations as a charitable contribution. So they took their direct payments and made them a gift to nonprofit organizations. It'll be interesting to see as that charitable giving incentive increases to $600 per family. Does that have a positive impact for our nonprofit organizations who are absolutely in need of those charitable contributions?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a big deal. And as you said, end of year, right? The timing could not be better.
So right? What would I be doing if I was a nonprofit executive right now? I would be A, following this, and B, I would be communicating with my supporters. If, you know, whether it's those on my email list, those on my mailing list, to inform them, because people may not be following it closely. And those who are already making gifts to your organization, to inform them of this additional tax benefit that is an incentive for them to continue giving to your organization.
Excellent.
Now Gary, the last point I think we wanted to cover from the stimulus package is around the employee retention tax credit. Now that is one that I know is right in your wheelhouse. So I'm going to turn it over to you.
I want to talk about two refundable tax credits really quickly. And refundable tax credits freak people out. And I don't know why.
Right? I know why. They're not accountants. They don't like numbers and calculators.
I like numbers. But you know, what I would say is, you know, stop thinking about what's a refundable tax credit and know this is a program that puts money in your pocket. So refundable tax credit means you are getting a credit off your taxes. So it's like the federal government is paying your tax bill. And refundable means if it's more than the taxes you owe, you get money back. And by the way, this is off of payroll taxes. So nonprofits, you're in this too, right? You know, this counts for you. So the two I want to talk about is the employee retention tax credit and also the family first leave. So employee retention tax credit. So some of you may have remembered this one and just got turned off to it because, you know, last year you needed to show, or until this bill passed, you needed to show that you had a 50% reduction quarter over quarter, right? So quarter 2019, quarter two, you know, your revenue dropped 50% to quarter two in 2020, right? That's a pretty big drop. You also couldn't get any of that credit if you got a PPP at all, period, anytime. The government's changed a lot of rules around this that are really significant. So number one, as long as you're not double counting PPP money, you can get this credit. So let's say you expended your PPP in quarter two. Well, you could apply for this credit in quarter three and quarter four if you're eligible. That you couldn't do that before. They've extended it out to July. of 2021. So now you have even more time that you could bank in on it. They also took that 50% reduction and made it a 20% reduction. So if you had a 20% reduction in any of those quarters and you do going forward to July 1st, as long as you weren't spending money on PPP, this would count. Now think about this, especially for the nonprofits out there. I know a lot of you said, well, we had certain grant funded positions we didn't count against the PPP.
Right.
So other mechanic that changed, which is a big, big change, is you're allowed to take in the credit half of the qualified wages up to $10,000, period. The federal government has changed that to you are allowed to take 70% of the gross wages up to $10,000 per quarter. So if you do that math, that's a huge difference. Huge difference, right? You can get to that $10,000 limit faster. Mm-hmm. You can also get $10,000 per employee a quarter where you're in that zone. So right. This is a huge difference, huge difference. And by the way, the tax credits, you know, you can get that money back pretty quickly in cash, right? So that's one. The other one I want to talk about is Families First. And, you know, this is just at a very high level, federal government for small businesses under 500, because many small businesses don't have any sort of sick leave. They've given you the opportunity to get 2 weeks, 5 days each of sick leave at your daily rate up to $511. Mm-hmm. If you have coronavirus, if you test, if you do have coronavirus, if you're taking care of somebody with coronavirus, or if you have to quarantine because of an exposure, right? So I know this could affect a lot of you, and this could affect your entire business, right? Not just one person. And that's a refundable tax credit. So you get that money back. The other part of it is there's then an additional 10 weeks, and you could even use that sick leave for 12 weeks of pay at 2/3 your daily rate up to $200 for taking care of a child who is not in school. Doesn't count for winter vacation, doesn't count for a snow day, sorry, New England, but it does count intermittently. It does count for remote school. So, you know, if let's say, you know, my kids, the week after Christmas, right, the school has said we're going entirely remote. You're not hybrid, everyone's remote. Well, theoretically, if I'm not working that time because I'm taking care of the kids, I can use this tax credit. So that's a great opportunity to, A, give benefit to your employees, right? Recoup some of the money that they may be, that you may be laying out because you're generous and you want to try to cover that remote learning. But that illness piece, that sick leave, is absolutely critical because we're seeing a lot of organizations that have to shut down in total, right? Because there's an exposure. Right. So don't forget about that one as well.
Okay. So as we wrap up, Gary, I think there's a lot of information that we've shared. And I think we've tried to break it down into what we know right now, what we don't know, and what should people be paying attention to. So just as a quick wrap up, a quick summary, you know, I think what we've talked about is the pay attention to the PPP. That is something that could reopen in relatively short order, assuming that they have a bill that gets signed by the president. So begin to gather some of that information. Stimulus payments, direct payments to individuals and families. Pay attention to that as well. Charitable giving for our nonprofit friends that are listening today is an opportunity, both in the short term, possibly before the end of the year and end of 2020, and also moving into 2021 represents an opportunity to develop some strategy and also be aware of, as you said, the refundable tax credits that can have a significant impact on small businesses and even nonprofits, because you said it applies to payroll taxes. So anything else I missed? Anything else you want to add?
The biggest thing I would say is, if it were me, you know, while we're waiting for everything to get sussed out, right? As you're sitting in the holidays, your feet up, you know, that fire going. If you're like me, right? Like you're sitting there with your laptop, I would run that quarter over quarter number. Because as you're hearing it's coming up as an important litmus test, run it now, be ready, right? As Greg said earlier, if you're hitting some of these numbers, start figuring out what your strategy is going to be in the new year. Because the other thing that we hadn't talked about was the PPP money, because there are all these changes. We don't know how fast that money is going to go. It might go slow, like the second tranche did. It might go really fast. We just don't know. So you want to be ready.
So we've shared a lot of information here. I'm going to throw you under the bus here, Gary, and say that as we continue to learn a little bit more, I'd love to continue this conversation, continue sharing these video resources with organizations and small businesses out there. But for anyone who's watching this right now, who wants to get a little bit more information or who wants to ask a specific question, how can folks best get a hold of you and best get a hold of some of that information?
Absolutely. So, you know, we'll certainly be, you know, distributing information through Nonprofit Vision, our podcast of choice, right?
Much appreciated.
As we have it. But, you know, don't hesitate to email me directly, Gary@CivStrat, C-I-V as in Victor, S-T-R-A-T.com. If you don't want to do that, go to our webpage, www.civstrat.com. You'll see there's a way to contact us. You know, I'm always happy to answer questions. I know Greg is as well. So Greg, you should share your information.
Absolutely. So you can get a hold of me on my website at nielsenconsults.com. That's N-I-E-L-S-E-N, consults, plural.com. Or you can email me directly at gregory@nielsenconsults.com. Gary and I have worked very closely together throughout this process, throughout 2020 on PPP forgiveness, and making sure organizations and our clients are as prepared as possible to navigate the changes that have come along the way. But in closing, I want to thank everybody for listening, and also want to wish everybody a happy holiday and hope that you stay safe, stay well, and have a happy and meaningful holiday with your family this year. Gary?
Absolutely. Same here. I hope it's a wonderful holiday for everyone. Happy New Year. You know, I'm half Sicilian, so I'm going to knock on wood. It'll be a better year next year.
Stay safe and stay well.